96 FM.
Yeah, very welcome along to the program. JP McNamara, myself, Trevor Welch, until 6 o'clock. And we've got heavy stuff on today. And we'll begin with Gaelic Games. And the Cork County Senior Hurling Championship Final is, of course, the centrepiece of today's local Gaelic Games action. Defending champions Mochilly taking on Glen Rovers at Parky Rin at 4 o'clock. And Brian Lawton of Mochilly says they are taking nothing for granted today.
Yeah, you do. We don't take anything for granted. But I think it's more so the experience of it that you're used to it over the last couple of years. Look, we'll see whether that'll stand to us. Hopefully it will. But the other side of it, look, the Glen have won two in this decade. We won two in this decade. They're well used to county finals as well.
It's going to be some cracker today. Well, Dean Brosnan of Glen Rovers says the Glen have a good record but need to keep the pressure on.
It's unbelievable. Five county finals, as you said, it's an achievement in itself. It's actually, we're more consistent than what people would think. Once we've got to a quarter final in that stage, we've always made the county final. So five county quarter finals, five county semi-finals, and the Glen haven't lost one. So that's an amazing fact and shows the consistency what we have once it gets to the business end of the season. Whereas this year, up until maybe the semi-final, we were performing poorly and won. So that's the sign of a good team and that we're starting to gel a bit better.
Throw-in is 1.5 hours time away at Parky Rin. The opening game on the doubleheader is the Premier Intermediate Football Championship semi-final replay between St. Michael's and Kanturk. That started at 2, so it's approaching half-time. And Fimar McCarthy, of course, is watching.
Yes, and we're almost at half-time.
Now, every Sunday in lockdown, I'm giving a tale, Trevor's tales, from his sporting experiences around the globe. And this is my latest one. Are you ready for this? Right, the year is 1990, World Cup finals in Italy, Ireland against Holland in Palermo. I was at the game myself, and I remember this from outside the ground when, after the match, a number of Republic of Ireland fans who couldn't get tickets for the game, but they had a lot of drink on board, and they were outside the stadium singing when Ireland qualified for the next phase of the competition. And they're full of drink, and they're waiting to get on the bus. But one of the Irish fans spotted Jimmy McGee across the other side of the road, and one of the lads said, "Look, ask Jimmy. Jimmy will know. He's the memory man. He knows everything. Ask Jimmy. He'll know. Go on, ask him." So one of the Irish fans shouts out, "Jimmy!" And McGee says, "How's it going?" And he goes, "Question." And McGee goes, "Shoot." He goes, "Which hotel are we in?"
Hit it now.
It's over here at Turner's Cross in the Alan Bennett testimonial game, where the Cork City Legends and Cork City Select played out an entertaining 3-3 draw. A host of Cork City greats turned out in splendid sunshine to pay tribute to one of the greatest servants in the club's history, who won league titles in 2005 and 2017 and was captain of the double winning side of 2 years ago. Current City manager and league winner with City in 2005, Neil Fenn, opened the scoring just before half time for the Cork City Legends. And 3 minutes into the second half, the Legends doubled their advantage when Christina Dring was brought down for a penalty. Dring stood up herself to fire past Anthony Fennelly. Paul Bowden pulled one back for the Cork City Select in the 52nd minute, but 12 minutes from time, the Legends scored their third, a trademark John O'Flynn header, too hot to handle. Paul Bowden scored his second in the 81st minute for City Select, another tap-in for the former defender to make it 3-2. And right before full-time, another great Ollie Cal scored the equaliser for the Cork City Select. This was another hugely memorable day in the life and times of a true Cork City great, whose career in football goes on and on. We salute you, Alan Bennett. Full time at Turner's Cross, Cork City Select 3, Cork City Legends 3. Trevor Welch live at Turner's Cross. Good to see you back in Cork again. You mentioned on the win the 4-4-2 formation. I know you're playing in a rugby ground in Cork, but it suggests that you're a bit of a football fan.
I am, yeah. I would keep it quiet these days.
Manu, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. Because you're born in Cheshire, obviously. Altrincham. That's where Dennis Irwin actually lived.
I was born in town. Actually, I was closer into town, but we moved out as my parents started to do better. We got into the posh bit. So it's in the blood. You can't get rid of it, can you? I've been going to the Old Trafford since I was just a little kid on my dad's shoulders, you know. Mm. So it's just not a rational relationship. Unfortunately, things have gone, you know, a bit pear-shaped, but you know, we all love Ollie, so we'll stick with him until his era is over.
Yeah, great stuff. You played in many venues in Cork, of course. You were here as a young David Gray growing up, and you know, I suppose this will be the biggest audience, Independent Park, and a sports ground. Have you played in many sports grounds in the past?
I've played in Munster's other rugby stadium.
Yeah, Tormundger.
Yeah, so I have played a few. Yeah, and famously in Killarney back in whenever that was, 2003. So, but not that many.
So Sheffield United lead Manchester United 1-0 at half-time, and Sheffield United certainly having much more of the chances. United need to buck up their ideas in the second half. After yesterday's results, Liverpool remain 8 points clear of Leicester City at the top. 30 matches now unbeaten for Jurgen Klopp's side. And John Aldridge, former Liverpool striker, was in Cork this week for the launch of Liverpool's pop-up shop in the city in Mailer Street. I spoke to John on Ireland's upcoming playoff for the European Championships 2020, and also on Liverpool's feel-good factor at the moment.
You know, you got the feel-good factor for Liverpool fans all over the world at the moment, because we're playing so well with the champions of Europe, and the Irish fans in Liverpool. Liverpool and Ireland are buzzing about it, aren't it? So it's good timing.
Yeah, funny you said it, because I was only thinking on the way in, the power has shifted, like a couple of years ago when Ferguson was with United winning everything, and you see United jerseys everywhere. Seems to be Liverpool jerseys.
Yeah, it is.
It's to do with the way they're playing.
It's right, you know, it's true, you know, that's what happens. It has a knock-on effect.
The win against City, Man City, was hugely important, obviously, and when you look at them, John, they haven't replaced Vincent Kompany. Defensively, they're not as probably as strong as they were last year, would that be fair?
Yeah, going forward, they're strong. Midfields, wow, you've got some fantastic players. But defensively, you know, we put three past them. You know, Norwich done the same. Mm. So it's not all well and good. You know, Laporte is a big player for them. He's been out for a while. They need him back. No, Man City, they might go out in January and spend 100 million on someone if they're eligible to, with what's going over them with FIFA at the moment, with the inquiries. But that's a wait and see. But all Liverpool can do is look after themselves.
And just from an Irish point of view, when you play with Liverpool, you know, there's Stones in there and Houghton and yourself, there was a lot of Irish players. It's more difficult for Irish players, even English players, to get into the top teams, isn't it? I know there's a young fella from Cork with Liverpool in the squad, Cueven,
he's doing well. You know, we all wish him well. He's a good lad, he's well thought up. You know, his time will come. He's very young. He's just got to keep on working. But gone are them days. It's tough now.
Global game, isn't it?
It is. It's changed dramatically.
Mm. And just finally, on to the Republic of Ireland. Obviously, you're watching their qualification. You know, going for three in a row. But it's going to be difficult now as it's down to the Slovakia game. What have you made of Ireland under Mick McCarthy?
It's a tough group in the end. We've got ourselves in such a great position, but you know, look, if you had Robbie Keane, would have qualified. End of story.
Goals was a huge problem.
End of story. That goes, you know, without saying. We done pretty well. I thought against Denmark, the game plan was excellent. You know, we just didn't have the goal scorer. We failed to deal with one cross, one really good cross and bit of movement. We switched off, and it cost us dearly. Slovakia. They're beatable, but away from home, there's a massive advantage for them. You know, with extra time and possibly penalties, you don't know. And then the final will be away leg again. You know, would it be Northern Ireland or Bosnia? We'll have to wait and see. But it's a tough ask. It really is a tough ask for us. You know, if Mick and the lads can come through that, then they'll do themselves, wow, you know, so, so proud it would be.
Now, there was late drama in one of the big games in the Europa League on Thursday night. Arsenal fans look away now. Last year's beaten finalist knocked out by Olympiakos, the Greek league leaders, against all of the odds. The goal coming in stoppage time at the end of extra time. I was on commentary duties at the Emirates in London, and this is the moment when Youssef El Arabi became the Olympiakos hero.
There's the corner. Head of clear, goalkeeper up for that. Jose Sa. And Arsenal have to defend this. Oh, goal! El Arabi has done it for Olympiakos, the top scorer in Europe, the Moroccan international. And look at those celebrations for Olympiakos.
That was the moment, yes, that Olympiakos broke Arsenal hearts. In the Europa League, they're into the last 16, the draw of which was made on Saturday, yesterday, and Friday, in fact, the draw was made. And Olympiakos have drawn Wolves, tough game for them, but that was yours truly on commentary duties for Virgin Media Sport on Thursday.
Milan, a lighthearted note, you mentioned yourself and Joe there a while ago.
suits on the line or tracksuits on the line, considering your past fashion goals in Cork and yeah. Valentine's night as well?
Yeah. Well, we've...
What are you going to go with?
Simply Suits are a great sponsor to us. Get that in, right? And they're providing every player with a suit for every home game. So even Joe's got one.
Is he going to wear it?
And he's got one. he got it from the communion section, but listen, we won't say that. No, but he's got one. Everyone's got one. And we'll all wear that to the game. Then, obviously, the boys will be in tracksuits, and I'll probably keep a suit on to fly the flag for Simply Suits.
And for Valentine's night.
And for Valentine's night, a little rose in the lapel.
We'll stay with soccer and an interview here on The Score with a Difference. A former Manchester United footballer, Father Philip Mulryan, has moved to Cork to take up a role as novice master for the Irish Dominicans. Father Philip was born in Belfast in the late 70s and in 1994 was signed by Alex Ferguson for United on a four-year contract, making his debut in 1997 against Ipswich Town. Philip only played a handful of games for the first team, but played well over 100 matches for Norwich City, who he spent 6 years with. Mulryan was also capped for Northern Ireland on 27 occasions, scoring 3 goals for his country. He was a member also of United's FA Youth Cup winning team of 1995. I caught up with Father Mulryan at St Mary's Church in Cork this week to talk about life as a kid growing up in Belfast, signing for Alex Ferguson, and for the day that's in it, the big rivalry between Manchester United and Liverpool.
I was born in 78, so yeah, I grew up in West Belfast, and pretty much sport was my whole childhood, really. The soccer and Gaelic and hurling as well, Gaelic football and hurling at the same time, so I played all three. And I suppose coming from where I came from in West Belfast, which was a difficult place to grow up in, sport was really an avenue for all of us to get off the streets. And you know, I was very lucky with my parish team and my GAA team as well, to near enough every day I was involved in sport in some way, especially soccer.
Yeah, and as we well know, Northern Ireland has a huge link with football cross channel, a special link, I suppose, to Manchester United, going back to George Best and
yeah.
And you had Jimmy Nicol, obviously, and Sammy McElroy, and more recently, I suppose, Norman Whiteside as well, of course, and
yeah.
More recently, Johnny Evans. So there's always that big link with United in Belfast or Northern Ireland, isn't it?
Yeah, and I would say throughout the whole island of Ireland as well, you know, there was always that great link. And there was another fellow, Keith Gillespie, as well, who just went a number of years before me and
right.
Broke into the first team, you know. So, I was very fortunate. Just got spotted playing in the Milk Cup, a big tournament in the north of Ireland, and I was playing for my county at it. And we drew Man United at the time. And I played against them and had a good game. And after the game, I was invited over for a trial. And then went over and trial went well and then signed after that.
Yeah. Alex Ferguson signed you. You were only a teenager, weren't you?
Yeah. 14 really when I signed, and then 16 when I moved over full time. As soon as I did my exams at school, moved over full time at 16
yeah.
As an apprentice. Then, you know,
what was it like on the Ferguson? We know he's fiery customer, obviously, yeah. But usually successful and motivated man.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable experience, really. You know, just even as a youngster, the attention to detail and even his kind of dedication to the youth teams and watching all the games and being concerned about your improvement and how you were getting on. And there was a real, for such a big club, there was a real family atmosphere and a good sense to it, you know. You really felt part of it. And the fact that we all trained at the same place, you know, at the Cliff Training Ground, you were around the first team and seen the players coming in. And so there was a great sense of belonging to the club, even as a young player, you know. But the manager was always very good to me, you know, and I have none but positive things to say about my experience there. Really kind of such formative years, really, from the age of 16, kind of shaped me in many different ways, you know, for to go on and have a bit of a career after.
And you came at people talk about timing in life and timing in football. You were there at the right time when yeah. United just started taking over as the powerhouse of English football.
I went in 94, so that you know, the team was starting to be hugely successful then, but you know, it was just the year or two before, you know, people like Paul Ince and Mark Hughes and all that, Kanchelskis and all those, you know, started to leave, and what's called the class of 92 started to come through. And then I suppose Roy Keane especially was well established then, coming from Forest. So a wonderful time to be at the club, but a difficult time as well for any young player who's
yeah.
trying to break in, because they were such a once in a generation team, you know, that to get in that team you'd have to be you know, world class player, really, you know. So difficult to forge a career for a player who's maybe decent enough, but not maybe at that level. So
when you were a professional footballer, was it always in the back of your mind to go into the priesthood, or did that come after you retired, or was that
never enter my mind ever?
Really?
At any stage of my life until I was 29. So now, if you ask my sister and some members of my family, they'd say it was there in my early teens, in my childhood. I can't remember that, but they're adamant that it was there. For me, everything was football. You know, I just wanted to be a footballer, and was very fortunate to have a career over 12 years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything kind of changed when I was 29. I came home and quite dissatisfied with how I was living and my lifestyle in general, and really felt there was something missing. And only then did I start to explore again the question of faith and this dimension of my life that was there as a teenager, which I abandoned, like, really, when I went over to England to be a footballer, kind of left it behind. And when I rediscovered that, I kind of got a real sense of fulfilment and a happiness that I never had as a footballer, really, you know. So I just followed that, and in the course of that year, started to feel the desire and the stirrings of maybe a vocation to priesthood. It came from nowhere, really.
Yeah.
And so it took a few months with that, and then made the decision to give it a go.
Fascinating man, I have to say, Father Philip Mulryan. Thank him again for his time. I met up with him at St Mary's Church this week. We're going back to Parky Rin now, because I'm sure it's close, probably half-time now, actually, in Immokalee and St Finbar. Sean from Ballincollig was on. He said, learn how to pronounce Immokalee. I might have just a slip of the tongue earlier, but Finbar would tell you I was commentating in Immokalee over 30 years ago.
You were?
But multi-channel.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's a bit, funny enough, it depends on who you speak to. Some people call Immokalee and other people say Immokalee. Gerald McCarthy, for instance, used to ask him, "Oh, Immokalee." They don't have to be different, but I always call him Immokalee.
Correct.
Will we agree on that?
We agree on that. Certainly. Yeah,
we give a gold medal to the winner.
Appreciate the fact, yeah.
At least there's someone listening, Trev.
We give it to Sean.
We give it to Sean. Yeah, tell him it's in the post.